Welcome. You're listening to the Sisters of Sexuality, Five Shades of Play. I am your guest host and sex goddess for the evening, and we're here for the purpose of educating, entertaining, and informing you in all areas of, it's been a long time, sexuality, sex health, kink, relationships, and the business of sex. And this is a special day, and I'm so happy to be here this evening. We are visiting with the founding goddess, Taylor Sparks, and celebrating and delving into her new release, The African American Guide to Ethical Non-Monogamy. There's so much to ask, so much to take notes about. So get your iPads out, get your, you know, because so many people want information about this, and she's going to delve deep. And please send in your questions. And welcome to the show, Taylor Sparks. What's up?
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into all the questions I have for you, sis, I just want to really tell you how proud I am of you, how much respect I have for you to, you know, follow your heart and bring this to our community. And then just how amazing you are. And, you know, I just want to give you your flowers for this book ahead of time, because I'm not going to be able to get at you by then. You're going to be all over the place.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited. It's been a bit of a journey to write it. It's been something in part on my mind for almost 15 years. And finally, I'm like, this is the time. This is it. We're going to put it all together. So here it is.
Cool. So this is a juicy book. And I'm just going to tell you up front, you are going to want to stay tuned throughout this whole conversation during this episode, because we're going to also talk about the complement to this, the book. And I'm asking a lot of questions because I know that the questions that people ask me all the time, I finally get to go to the source. Taylor has a wealth of information in these areas of that we're going to talk about in her book, but also there's supplemental support for you. So stay tuned, because I know you're going to want it and need it. So starting off, I want to ask you, why the book and why now?
Well, I wrote the book primarily because when I first entered into the ethical non-monogamous lifestyle, my husband and I was looking for information for us as we were first open before we kind of backed into the swinging thing. But I noticed, like, going to the resorts and the parties, that our groove was just a little different when it came to ethical non-monogamy. The end result was the same, you know, when it comes to like swinging and being open. You know, we all were there for the same thing, but our take on it was just a little different. So I was going to write a book called An African American Guide to Swinging, and I never got around to it. I ended up launching Organic Lovin', and then I ended up also transitioning not only into swinging, but into polyamory and a little kink, and traveling around the world and teaching and coaching in the ethical non-monogamous community. And then in the last 15 years, I've learned so much. But from that day to this day, nobody still has written a book about us, about our history in America as African Americans, and how our relationships have come to be where they are today. And then as social media started to expand and more people were being more upfront about being swingers, and then more upfront about being poly, and then people like Ron Young had launched blackandpoly.org, and there was a Facebook community, and now there's lots of communities. I found a lot of people who were entering into or transitioning through ethical non-monogamy struggling. They were struggling with the differences and confused, or not having any place to turn for some complete information on the differences between open, swinging, poly, polygyny, polyandry. They, you know, there's just a lot of information out there. And if you were really serious, where do you go? So I thought, we need a book.
You mentioned struggle what does a struggle look like when a couple or individual is trying to find information, getting misinformation or lack of clarity of information? What does that struggle look like, or what can it look like?
Yeah, a lot of the struggle is with the emotions, right? Because if you're coming from a monogamous upbringing in a monogamous and a primarily monogamous country, and if you add religion on top of that, the struggles are, am I doing this right? What is allowable? What is okay? What is not okay? You know, how do I handle these emotions that are coming up? Am I not supposed to be jealous? But I am jealous. You know, I don't like that. So, and how do you figure it out? And so some of the misinformation would be, well, you know, if you're poly, you ain't gonna be jealous. So you know, there's something wrong with you that you're jealous. So now you're dealing with the feelings of inadequacy because you can't figure out why you can't deal with your emotions. Some of the other struggles is communicating, right? How do you tell your partner that you want another partner? Or how do you tell your partner you want to have sex with other people without feeling shame, without feeling like you're taking advantage of a situation if your partner allows it or you're using someone? So a lot of it is communications, a lot of it is shame, and just what is allowed and not allowed within ethical non-monogamy, just knowing what's okay and what's not okay.
I wanted to ask you, when you decided to write this book and you wanted it to be for the African-American community in mind, were you also thinking about the monogamous people taking a look at this book so they could better understand people that, you know, relate differently? Or was it really just for people who are seeking information because they want to get involved?
The book is primarily for people who are seeking information or, like I said, struggling through the transition. But for people who are monogamous, there is a lot of information in here that can help them in their monogamous relationships with regards to having authentic honesty in their communication. A lot of time in monogamy, we don't tell our partners and say things to our partner because, you know, we're afraid to hurt their feelings. We're afraid they may feel disrespected because of the thoughts that we have or the way that we behave. There's shame, of course. And then you have some of the toxic parts of monogamy, like the codependency, like your partner is supposed to be everything to you. And to find out that you can still be married and monogamous and still have some autonomy. So monogamous individuals, couples, will gather a lot of information from the book and things that will be helpful for them as monogamy. And they might want to be what's called monogamish, which is you...
I think that when I looked at the body of work, this is very good for people who are happily monogamous, but the world is changing around us every day. Yes. So if we have a source, we're just ear hustling and hearing a bit of everything, because some of the relationships haven't gotten this information yet. So there are some bad examples out there that are confusing. And then you mentioned something. You said monogamous people have the symptom of the codependency. Yeah. Could codependency also exist in
ethical non-monogamy? Yeah, it could. You could end up being codependent in ethical non-monogamy. You know, it is just a type of relationship structure. It is possible. But the one thing about ethical non-monogamy is that people are very much looking to be autonomous and maintain the autonomy. So it's unlikely to happen, but sure, it definitely could. It definitely could.
Well, chapter 3 and chapter 4 to me give everyone a glimpse into how serious you took this journey of writing the book, because breaking ethics down when it comes to ethical non-monogamy, I think is important because more and more people are using that word. And I think it needs to be clear so that people feel safe if they're considering how should I be non-monogamous. And then talking about the history of marriage, some of the things that you should, any of those things, people don't talk about that.
Especially the ethics, you know, the ethics is not only, it's not ethical, but also ethical in monogamy, right? being able to have a system of principles and values that kind of guide your behavior, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, distinguishing between what's right, what's wrong. And you have to, and you know, we all have our social policies, right? Kind of what the world says how we should behave. We talk about character, you know, character is something that happens when nobody else is looking. You know, so when you're by yourself and, you know, and setting your own boundaries, right? You got personal boundaries, you got physical boundaries, you have emotional boundaries, and helping people understand the difference between boundaries and what we call borders, right? And some people don't know the difference. We set up these, what we think are boundaries, but they're actual borders, right? So I always describe using, what's her name, Esther Perel's analogy of the differences. So a border is kind of like the cement size of a wall in the canal that the boats go through, right? They're hard, they're immovable, but boundaries are more like the shoreline. So they're more fluid. So when you set boundaries with your partner, it means that these are the boundaries that we have set, right? But you are an individual person. And I expect that if you decide to cross this boundary, you know, or make a change to this boundary, that you would at least take me into consideration. But I believe that you will make the best decision for yourself at the time you need to make it. And I trust that you will make it because you believe that's the best decision for you. Of course, you're going to consider your partner. Again, ethics is this key word here, but you're not trying to set up these rigid, listen, if you meet a person and you decide that you want to have a conversation with them, I want you to stop what you're doing, call me, and let's discuss it. It's like, you know, or, you know, you need to call me within an hour of talking to this person. The like, well, what if you want me to break this mood that we're in, not sex, but just this flow of conversation, this getting like, oh, I need to call my partner and let them know I'm talking to somebody. Like, what are you going to tell them?
Do you think the partner requires that or expects their mate to do that, whether it's the male or the female? I think that they're subconsciously interjecting themselves into that experience by saying, no matter what, at this hour, call me, because actually they're there then. They're a part of the experience, you know, if the person is reaching out to them during that time.
It's not so much to be a part of the experience. Mostly it's a way to have a security that you thought about me in the midst of doing something else. So you called me to reassure me that, you know, that you're keeping the boundary that we set. So well, I'm going to reassure you by stopping what I'm doing and going, hey, babe, I met this person. We're just chatting at the bar, but I wanted to let you know that I met this person and I'm just sitting here chatting. So now they're like, okay, good. So they call me and they let me know. So they haven't crossed any boundaries. It's like, why do they need to call you?
I'm looking at it is that if that person is saying, I really desire to have another thing, person or experience, and they're on that experience. And then you say, but I want some of your attention on that experience. Make sure you give it to me because that's the rule. Then it's still not the same as them
that's
having
it. See, but that's a border. That's the rule. That's a border. That's not a boundary. This hard set. You have to do this within. When we first got involved in the lifestyle, Max and I, you know, we had so many boundaries. And one of them was if we were going to have an intimate time with someone else, it could only last an hour. I don't know why we came up with the 60 minute rule. I don't know who decided it was going to be 60 minutes.
Well, you think it finishes and the other person doesn't, that you only have to an hour or something?
You only got 1 hour. But I mean, it's not like we were even in the same state. We were doing things totally separate at the time. But it was like, but a lot of times we set up these boundaries to protect ourselves and to protect what we believe needs to be protecting, which is the relationship. And the relationship really doesn't need to be protecting. And your partner doesn't need to be protecting because no one can, I tell people all the time, no one can steal someone that doesn't want to go, and you cannot make someone stay that's ready to leave. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
So what about the marriage? First of all, you're not married anymore.
Nope. I was married for 25 years. And out of the 25 years, we were ethically married for 12 years and ethically ethically monogamous for 12 years and ethically non-monogamous for the remaining 13 years. And then at the end of our, and the ethical non-monogamy part for us worked well, actually, that really worked well. But at the end of 25 years, our vision wasn't the same. You know, we wanted different things for the remaining part of our life. Neither one of us considered the marriage a failure. You know, we had two great kids. We bought some property. We traveled around the world together, but he wanted something and I wanted something completely different. So it was like, I think, you know, he should have what he wants and I'm having what I want. So we parted friends and, you know, it's all good. In that instance,
your journey from being married for such a long period of your life and now into this new realm of being open, did that inspire you to want to write the book?
Not really, because as I mentioned, this was something I wanted to write, but I was initially only thinking from the swinger perspective because that's where I was at the time. So, and I've been kind of working on this even, I mean, well, we've been separate, divorce almost 3 years. So I've been kind of working on it for a couple of years. I've been putting it down, picking it up, putting it down, picking it up. But it was more about my journey between the different types of ethical non-monogamous love styles. And nobody else was really, you know, writing about it or talking about it. And there's, you know, there's a really big fixation currently on polyamory and polygyny. And some people are pushing it out, the polygyny, which is, so under polygamy, you have polygyny, right? Let me go back. Polygamy is more than one spouse, right? Polygyny is one husband with more than one wife. And polyandry is one wife with more than one husband. So there's been a big push for polygyny, right? A husband with more than one wife. But some people are pushing it as a very sexual type of thing. And it makes it more enticing for people, like, yeah, me and two women, because, you know, what man doesn't want two women? But polygyny is actually more religious based, and you have to be legally married to one of the partners. So if you're a man with two women that you're calling them both your wives, you're actually polyamorous. You're not polygynous, you know? So modern polygyny, you really can just, you know, it doesn't have to be religious based, but you would need to be legally married to at least one of the partners in order for it to be polygyny. Otherwise you are polyamorous, which is still fine, you know, and you can be polyamorous and still be legally married to one of the partners.
How did the research and development for chapter 4 affect you when you saw the information around the history of marriage and
ooh, yeah, that was deep. I did a lot of research on, the history of Black marriage, but just the history of marriage, which I had looked at years ago when I started thinking about doing the book for swingers, right? And literally going on the internet, there's research that goes on and on and on. But to realize that marriage as we know it today, modern marriage, has only been this way for the most recent 200 or so years, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, marriage was a contract. It's still a contract, right? But it wasn't centered on love. It wasn't centered on, they didn't become love focused until like the 1800s, until the Romantic era came about. So marriage before was, you know, your mom and dad had a daughter, you, and 100 cows and 50 acres of land, and your neighbor had a son, and 100 sheep and 100 acres of land, but they knew that if they had their two children marry each other, the two families would have more power in the community because now it's twice as much land, twice as many animals, and your husband was not the center of your world and vice versa. You guys got together, had children in order to work the land and to grow more prosperous within that, whatever that focus was, right? Whether it was growing land or raising sheep or cows, Was there love? A lot of times love came. Yes, it did come. But your passion was outside of the marriage. It might have been the stable boy. You know, it could have been knitting or making quilts, you know, and you had your girlfriend circle. Your passion was not, and your whole focus was not your spouse. That was just that. But with the romantic era, and then men could, depending on the country, right? Depending on the culture, they could have more than one wife. Polygyny was a thing. In some countries and some cultures, the man could only have as many wives as he could afford, because women came with dowries. You know, they brought things, you know, to the marriage. So if he couldn't afford to have more than one wife, regardless of what he wanted, he didn't have more than one wife. So understanding that, and even coming to understand that polyandry, which still exists today, which is one wife with more than one husband, that existed in Nepal, in certain cultures and tribes in Africa, in India as well, and there's something in Nepal called fraternal polyandry, where the women actually marry brothers so they can keep more land in the family. So, and it still happens to this day. But as the Romantic era came about, as Christianity took hold and spread through the world, they started saying, listen, man, we can't have you 600 miles away with another family. We need you here in the village in case this war break out. We need all the men protecting it. So you know, and the Bible says, even though the popes used to not only be married, they had concubines of their own, you know, or mistresses, if you will. And that was totally acceptable. But as things changed, they started laying down the laws in Europe. And as European culture spread, they started making a big change. So that was something that was really interesting to discover. Also, homosexual same-sex marriages have been around. There's recorded marriages from the Roman era when Caesar was around, that they married two men. In some Native American cultures, there have been two men or two women married called two-spirit. They call them two-spirits. And because they were of the same sex. So that even existed way back in the day. So to discover that, what we know now, this, you are my everything and you complete me, is truly made up in the movies.
So after writing that chapter, how do you feel about marriage for you?
Well, you know, I when I first got into open marriage and swinging, I looked this up. So it felt like, wow, so this is really new. It's kind of a commercial. It's kind of, and I'm not following the Christian ways in that way. So it felt better for me that I was on a path that was not a new path, that lots of people have done this path, and it even felt even more when I discovered polyandry, because having a husband and three boyfriends just felt right for me. Just like, this just makes so much sense. I just have so much love to give and I want so much love. So it felt like, you know, you ever visit a new city or even a new restaurant and it just feels like I'm supposed to be here. That's kind of how it felt for me.
Oh, wonderful. So chapter 10 that you ask couples or people who read this book, you answer some really great questions. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, which ones do you think are the most important questions for people who are reading these chapters to learn more and, you know, be prepared for the transition they'll have to make to successfully be ethically non-monogamous?
What, how are they going to be prepared, you're saying?
Well, chapter 10, it talks about the list of questions that you answer about swinging and, is it right? Chapter 10 is about
we talk about the different love styles in each one. Yeah. So we have what it is, what it isn't, how it functions. Yeah. So
the reason why I was asking is regular people that got non-monogamous people and people who don't see that as appealing, I'm encouraging them to get this book because I talk to people a lot because they always have questions, even though they don't want to do it, you know. And
yes.
I understand their cousins and moms and dad, you know, people are exploring love a different way, but the world around them doesn't understand it. So I thought that this would be a great source. So when I looked at that, there are a lot of misconceptions about the poly dynamics and also what swinging is and why people want to even do that. And what's the difference between poly and swinging. And yes. So I was thinking that that's the most important chapter in the book for me and the people that I'm inviting and because of the questions that it answers, so that that's just where I can just say, you know what, go to chapter 10 of this book because it really breaks it down and it's thorough, you know, and patient for even for the people who don't know about this and they're seeking, they want information and feel safe.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times some of the misconceptions, especially around swinging, is that there must be something missing in your relationship. Because why would you need to go outside of your relationship to have sex with others? And that's that concept that when you're married, that, you know, everyone else is dead to you. Your feeling and desires for anyone else is dead, you know, that everything is shut off. And that your one true love, who now completes you, is in front of you. And as a human being with emotions, who's having human experiences and emotions, you do not become exempt from those emotions because you are dedicated to one person. And people get into the swinger community for hundreds. I have heard so many different reasons. And I don't think, and I've been in the lifestyle for 15, almost 16, 17 years now. And I have traveled around the world. I've been in, you know, lots of different continents, and I've met people from over 40 different countries in the lifestyle. And I can't think of one time where someone has said, we got in because something was missing. You know, it has been because there was varying libidos, right? There was curiosity. There was the two of them really, really always enjoyed lots of sex. And since they've been married, they still have lots of sex with each other. But once they discovered the lifestyle, I was like, oh, wait, we could have sex with other people too? You know, so swinger people, you know, the lifestyle people are emotionally monogamous, but they are physically non-monogamous, right?
Why is
because they're not looking to like have boyfriend and girlfriends. They're not looking to get emotionally involved. They're not looking to date. They are looking to have a sexual experience with one or two or 10 or 30 people and then go home. They take that excitement of new bodies and new sexual experiences. And, you know, and you learn a lot too, right? You can learn a lot when you're having sex with others, because, you know, you've been married, you know, when you've been married for a while and you have sex with your partner, although amazing, you still know exactly that. Okay, starts on the left breast. He'll be there for 5 minutes. Then he goes to the right breast. He'll be there for 8 minutes. Then he kisses down the middle of the belly. And then he, you know, he eats there for like 15 minutes. And then he gets, you know, you can just, you know, you tick, 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 tick.
My guy was everywhere. I was blindfolded. I didn't know what he's going to do to my body.
After the 17th time he blindfolded, you knew exactly where he was going to start.
Oh, no, actually, I really enjoyed that monogamous relationship and the sex. It was really good. I think it's the mentality of the people also could have a stale.
Yes.
Poly relationship as well, you know, if you don't keep it.
Yes, you can have a stale swinging relationship. Like I said, it is the people that are involved completely. And when we were monogamous, like I said, it was ethical. Nobody had cheated. I didn't know anything about open or swinging or poly, any of that. And we found out about it kind of accidentally. And I was still like, why would anybody do that? But I was so intrigued. And then the thought of like, you mean, and you know, and kind of the thought of going against the norm has always been the girl I am, right? Like, you should put on a slip. I'm like, what? Why? You know, I don't want to wear a slip.
That's weird.
So going against the norm, but you know, that pushing the envelope against society a little bit, I found a little intriguing. But I also found having the different sexual encounters and then bringing that energy back to my partner or sharing that energy with my partner was just thrilling, you know? And then what people don't talk about a lot is the friends that you make in the, mm-hmm. in the community. You make some long lasting, deeply connected friendships. And these are people that you end up sharing lots of other things with. You know, sometimes, you know, you go golfing together, you go fishing together, you meet up on trips together. And sometimes you make great friendships with people that you never even have sex with. But the mm-hmm. fact that you share this kind of secret life, you can become good friends and you travel the world together. And it just is because they're just regular people with kids and dogs and bills and mortgages and businesses and college degrees and, you know, cats that need to be neutered. They just like to have sex with other people. They really are no different, except for that sex part.
What was the most challenging chapter and what was your favorite chapter?
The most challenging chapter. You know, the research, I would say the research on the history of African-American marriage was the most challenging because the book is meant to be a guide, right? I'm not here trying to recount history of everything. I'm here to give people enough information to ask enough questions to make a decision on what's the best relationship love style for them. Is it open? Like I said, there's a big push for poly. But maybe swinging is better for you. Or maybe just a don't ask, don't tell is better for you. But if you don't know how those relationships function, right? But the history of African-American marriage was the most challenging because of the research that it took. I used a lot of research from Professor Diane Stewart's book, who I interviewed her on the podcast called Black Women, Black Love, America's War on Black Marriages. And we do know that, you know, our Black women were raped. We do know that our Black men were raped. We do know that we were bred to an extent. What we don't know is how far white America has started during slavery and even up to this day is doing everything to keep Black marriages at the lowest point of any other culture and ethnicity. They do it consciously. It's not even like, you know, oh, we don't even realize we're doing it. You know, they do it consciously to keep us at odds, black men and Black women. They imprison our men. Even this whole push with Black women being more highly educated than Black men right now, more of us are going to college, more of us are getting degrees, more of us are being pushed up the corporate ladder, primarily because we're women, we're not a threat to white men because we're women, right? Men are not threatened by women, but by pushing us further up the corporate ladder and by incarcerating our men at greater expenses, with great effort, they are keeping fewer men available for us. But discovering on the history of Black marriage that after the Civil War, right? Now, excuse me, before the Civil War, a lot of the men were, you know, farmed out. We could only get married because remember, we weren't citizens. We can only be married at the will of our master. So if we were only married at the will of our master, he could then say your husband's going to go with his other plantation 5 miles away, and I'm loaning him out for 2 years to that plantation. So while he was there, that plantation owner was like, well, I need to make some more babies because this is how I make my money. So you're going to marry Ethel over here while you're there for 2 years and have babies with Ethel. So he impregnates Ethel. He left you at the other plantation. He gets a pass once a month to come see you and the children, right? But after the civil, so he's polygamous, right? He's got two wives, right? Or polygynous. He's got two wives now, and he's got two families. Sometimes he's got three. Civil War comes. Now Black slaves, ex-slaves are trying to get legitimized, trying to get married. And they set up the Freedmen's Bureau and agents to marry us. And here you come with your two or three wives and all your children. The agent decided which one you got to marry legally. And then he was like, well, you're going to marry the one you have the most children with. So let's say he was married to you first and you got three children, and he married Ethel 2 years later and she got four children because she had twins. You would be left to your own accord. He was like, no, you can't stay married to her. You got to go marry, stay with Ethel if you want to be legal. And so because you as a woman could not write your own contract, you could not hire out your own labor, you and your children would be left with no protection, no provider, just wandering the fucking, you know, the countryside, trying to do whatever you could to pay to help support you and your kids. But now, of course, you're shunned because you are a single woman with no husband.
Exactly.
So as we move forward in history, even going through, you know, when the welfare system came about, only 3% of African Americans were on welfare. Because of racism, they would not let us get welfare. Welfare was put up for white folks. They would not allow us to be on welfare. But once we got on welfare, they, you know, you couldn't have a man in the house. Your brother couldn't be there. Your father couldn't be there. So here you are with two children. You meet a man, but because he's Black and because of racism, he's underemployed. He don't have enough money to even take care of you and your children. So you made more money by staying on welfare and sneaking around with him because you still wanted love and affection. So it was difficult research to understand how much Black America has pushed against us. So, but that did also lead me to the fact that, wait a minute, when we look at behavioral epigenetics, right, which controls how our DNA is functions, if you will, our family, some of our family members were polygamous, polygynous, polyandrous. So maybe if you look at epigenetics, maybe this is why some of us are more prone to it, and it feels right for us to be non-monogamous, because maybe it's, for some of us, it's in our DNA because we had ancestors that were non-monogamous. It's a stretch. I don't know if that's true.
I like that you're,
huh?
I like that you're saying maybe.
Well, I mean, it is possible, right? Because our ancestors were polygynous during slavery. So it is a possibility that some of us learned that it is possible to love more than one person at a time through our ancestors' DNA, through epigenetics. It is quite possible. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned something earlier about the don't ask, don't play. Is that considered poly?
Don't ask, don't tell. That is open relationships. And that's just one type of open relationship. So in the don't ask, don't tell, you might set the boundaries that, okay, oh, it's okay. Where you or the both of us or just I are going to have sex with others. I don't need to know any details, but here are the boundaries, right? Don't stay out all night. Always use a condom. Only do it when you're traveling on the road for business. Let's say, you know, you travel once a month. So you could have that kind of don't ask, don't tell. Where the don't ask, don't tell would be, okay, always use a condom. Come home at night. Just let me know that you're going to be out on a date.
Well, I'm clear about the don't ask, don't tell, but I was wondering, is that considered poly? Is that's still considered obviously ethically non-monogamous, but is that a poly person?
No, poly. So a polyamorous person is having more than one romantic relationship at a time with all parties knowing and consenting.
What about swingers?
Swingers are emotionally, are when individuals or couples decide to have sex with others, but people know. This is also, we know that we're doing these things with other and we are consenting.
So doesn't don't ask, don't tell fit into that?
Not necessarily. That's more of an open relationship in the don't ask, don't tell. Because usually, so typically in a swinger community, it's primarily, I would say 80% couples, and they're doing it together. So the agreements together, usually having sex with others together. Some may migrate only and have sex separately, you know, because they might have my husband and I, we migrated from open relationship where we did everything separate. We did nothing together.
Right.
But we were not don't ask, don't tell. We were like,
But if you agree and said, we do our thing just like you did, but you're with each other is, don't ask me and I won't tell you and I won't tell you and don't ask me. You guys agree with that? That's not considered swing?
It's more, there may be a few people that swing that way, but that's more of an open relationship than a swinging relationship.
And an open relationship, poly.
An
open relationship isn't poly.
Open relationship is not polyamory because polyamory is more emotionally connected, right? Unlike swinging, right? Swinging is just set. It's a sexual exchange.
That's why I keep thinking it feels like swinging because if it's not poly and it's not about love and it's just about sex.
It is very much, but it's typically the people are doing it separately, right? And more often than not, they overlap with the swinging and the open, right? But typically swingers are doing things together. The sex is together. Can they have some open components? Like, listen, I'm gonna be out of town. I'm gonna do this thing. But typically swingers are doing it together, typically. And they're having conversation and they're in the same location. But there are some swingers that play separate. So then we have an open relationship. So you're gonna have some overlap between open and swinging all the time. But also in swinging relationships, there is a lot of telling. Where you at, who you with, what you doing. Where open is typically, listen, I have a date tonight, you know, and the person will be like, okay, who you gonna be with? So you can, that's the best thing about ethical non-monogamy. You can decide to kind of make your own rules to some degree. What I give you in the book is the foundation. And then you can kind of move around that best fits you and your partner. Because our open relationship we didn't have don't ask, don't tell. We had this is what I'm doing and I'm telling, this is where I am. These are the boundaries. So, but I do know some people.
What if you date someone and they don't want you telling? They say, hey, I don't want you telling anything about. I'm private.
There's a difference between privacy and secrecy, right? So you can be private. And if your agreement is with your partner, because if you have a partner, right? If you're an individual, it's one thing. Who am I going to tell? There's nobody to tell. But between my partner and I, we tell. So if I'm going to be with you, my partner, one is for, especially as a woman, right? If I'm going to be with a man I don't know that well, he wants to know I'm safe. He wants to know who I'm with and where I am, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a tell. So if you don't want him to know that I'm with you, then we won't spend any time together because my relationship and my commitment is to my partner, mm-hmm. not to the person that I decide to have a romp with, you know, for 60 minutes, gotta go, get up. That did change over time.
What was your favorite chapter?
Oh my God, I love so many of the chapters. Do I have a favorite chapter? I love my whole book. I don't know if I have a favorite. Can I think about that? Can I come back on that?
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you a couple questions also about the series. Developed a series that supports the book, and definitely. I apologize. I know you created a series that supports the book, and I definitely want to recommend that to as many people as possible because I think that makes it come alive even more so because it's a new way to love. It's a new way to think. And even looking into it can be scary. Even when you get the information, that can make you more afraid, actually, because you realize, yes. I can do this and nobody can stop me. And so having that series, I believe, will help people, you know, begin to talk about their true emotions. Because if they've been monogamous and they're looking into ethically non-monogamous relationships, they've got to learn how to be honest because that's what's missing in a lot of monogamous relationships. To be successful, is they're being honest with yourself and being honest, picking the right partner so you feel comfortable to be honest.
Right, right. Okay, so we'll talk about the series, but now I know what my favorite, because you just triggered that, the emotion part in communication is my favorite. But in the chapter, communication is better in the morning, and it's better in the morning, you learning to use your words authentically. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, just because you have an emotion doesn't mean you have to act upon it right then and there. The biggest struggles I have discovered and witnessed and heard about was people who are having challenges with insecurity and jealousy. You do not become exempt from your emotions just because you decide to become ethically non-monogamous. And learning to manage your emotions is probably will give you one of the most successes, regardless of the love style that you choose. Learning to manage the emotion. So talking about that, giving examples, letting people know that it is possible to learn to manage your emotion, because when you open your relationship, you are still going to have moments of joy and anger and what feels like love and lust and and jealousy and insecurity, they don't go away. And learning to be able to manage yourself, right? Stop being the toddler that falls to the floor for attention, get up off the floor and use your words and say, listen, what happened yesterday? And I say things are better in the morning because sometimes you got to take a gut check. Mm-hmm. You set up all these boundaries, and I mentioned in the beginning of the book, all the boundaries we had by the end of 15 years and the lifestyle, the only bad boundaries we had were no children and no animals. Like that was all we had left. But you learn to say to your partner, listen, when this thing happened, or when you said this thing, I felt this way, without putting blame on them, without making them feel bad, without making them responsible for your emotions. They're not responsible. No one did anything to you or against you. People do things for themselves. And when they do these things for themselves, sometimes we're on the road that they're going down, And so helping people to understand that, because it took me a while to understand. I didn't suffer from jealousy before, during. I don't know if I ever told you, the only time I've ever been jealous was with one of my boyfriends, not ever with my husband.
No, I never knew that.
Yeah, I only had one jealous incident with the boyfriend from North Carolina when I left and came and moved down to Florida. And I had him with another sex goddess friend of mine. I'm like, well, she'll take care of you until we see each other. And I found myself, when they went on their date, just tore up from the floor with jealousy. Like, I couldn't go to sleep. I was waiting for him to text me to tell me everything that happened. And the date was at 6 o'clock and he didn't text at 7 or 8 or 9. Then I had imagined him leaving me and his wife for this chick, and he was leaving us and he was going to be with this chick and they were going to have babies. And, and it was, I didn't get in bed till midnight. I was tore up on the inside with just rage, and that rage with jealousy. And I was so insecure. As soon as I got in the bed with my husband, mind you, jealous about my boyfriend, my phone went bing. I got out of bed and I called him. Hey, how is everything? I didn't tell him for months that I was jealous. And he said, "Oh, me mariposa, one could ever." Oh, that was so cute.
So the goal is not to be poly or swinging means you're not, you don't ever feel jealous. It means own your shit.
It means own your shit. It means own your shit. We're all responsible for our own happiness and our own bullshit, because we all bring bullshit to the table. We all bring bullshit to the table, but it's our responsibility to manage it. It's not our partner's responsibility to make us happy. It's not our partner's responsibility to make us secure. It's our responsibility. Our partners can make a secure and happy environment for us in which we feel more secure, but that's an inside job. It works from the inside. So that leads me to the series, right? So I did the series to go along with the book so that, okay, people read the book. They're like, okay, great. I got this information, but I have more questions, right? This has just brought up a whole lot more questions in every chapter. So the series kind of follows the chapters, you know, not every single chapter, but it follows, you know, the really chapters that create these kind of questions so that now they have me. So now we can sit down, kind of go through the book together, so to speak. And now they're like, okay, yeah, I read this thing, but what about this? And what is this example? And we walk through this together, kind of hand in hand, so I can be there coaching them through this transition of ethical non-monogamy and let them know that, no, you're not crazy. And the way that you're doing it is fine. And if that works for you and your partner, it's totally fine. It's okay to do it that way. If it's consensual and you both are in alignment with it. So
this was so well thought out and just implemented with Black Excellence. And I'm so,
thank you.
It exists. And I know that there are other great authors that you've represented on your site and they have a wealth of information as well, but it wasn't in our sweet spot. So I'm thankful for that. And I hope it inspires not only more books from you, but from other authors. You know, I know a lot, you are a thought leader amongst sex workers and sex entertainers and sex health professionals. And I know when you make moves, they make moves. So the more that we have that, you know, innovative ways of where aren't our people getting, you know, my information, you know, in the sweet spot that we in the nobody care, you know, Asians aren't thinking about how African-American people have sex, you know, so
no. Don't
care that deeply about that is us. How does this whole process work? When you purchase the book, does that automatically enroll you in this for the series, or is it an all-inclusive purchase? What is that?
So the series, we started their series 2 weeks ago, so we're already a couple of weeks in. So I will be reposting when the series starts again. So it's a 6-week series. So you would have to sign up for the series and then we go from there. We meet once a week. And for about an hour and a half, we have time for questions. We go through the book together and you have opportunity to bring your own scenarios, if you will, to say, so this is what happened. How do we handle this?
Great. That's awesome. Well, I know y'all better sign up because I have at least, I don't know how many thousands of people I'm going to be telling about it. And do we need to pre-register? Is there going to be something provided where make sure that we have our space reserved or
yes, I will. There will be a link on the site and we will also be putting the link on social media so that you could register for the next series, which will be starting in the fall.
Thank you so much, Taylor. This is Taylor Sparks. Thank you for being on the show. I hope you can come back one day soon. And
thank you, Marish, for being here and, you know, for interviewing me and making everything amazing. And I love you. So for the rest of you guys, stay sexy.
I was going to do.
Okay, we'll say it.
Okay. And that wraps up another magical, sexy episode of Sisters of Sexuality, 5 Shades of
Play.
Sexuality. No,
Sisters 5 Shades of Play.
Sisters of Sexuality, 5 Shades of Sexuality. 5 Shades. You know what I'm talking about.
I know. You know what she's talking about.
This was 5 Shades of Play. It's been so wonderful sitting here and finding out more about the wonderful book, The African.
Wait, Parrish, tell people where they can find you.
Oh, The African American Guide to Ethical Non-Monogamy. And if you'd like to follow my journey as I follow my sister's journey of helping people understand more about this book, I'm going to be featuring it on The Poly Practice. You'll hear updates on Official Sexy Spirit TV on Instagram, but ultimately there'll be a series that's going to follow what's going on with this book and really rely on Taylor Sparks' expertise as I venture off into the poly practice. I'm going to practice being poly. I am poly. I didn't realize I've always been poly. Maybe not so much in the romantic way, but I am that. And so the more I practice it, the more confident I'll feel being in relationships, and that will help other people that are wanting to understand along the way. So yes. Thank you. I love you.
Thank you. I love you more. Bye-bye, guys.